Hi, and welcome to The Thing About Cotton, a podcast brought to you by the International Cotton Association, where we explore the anatomy of the cotton value chain and bring awareness to the industry through highlighting female leaders and their achievements. I'm Emma McDonough, and Cami won't be joining us today because she's got her hands full after the recent arrival of a perfect baby girl. So huge congratulations to Cami and Dan. I hope you're both getting some sleep. While Cami's on leave, I have the pleasure of having Rebecca Owen, a fellow Women in Cotton committee member, joining us today. Rebecca, the last time you were on the pod, you were recording from a wine cellar in Malaysia, and we were talking to Ikra Inam about sustainability in Pakistan, the things we do for women in cotton.
Yes, that is right. And that's quite the debut for me that I think I'm going to be quite proud of.
Probably quite fitting for cotton in general, I would say.
Exactly.
In today's episode, we sit down with Delaina White, the Secretary General of the IWTO, the International Wool Textile Organization, and the co-spokesperson for the Make the Label Count campaign. We'll hear what is happening in the legislative space of the European Union and why that matters for cotton.
Delaina has more than 20 years' experience in clothing design, textile manufacturing, merchandising, and product sourcing for fashion retail. She served as a board member of a clothing factory supplying retail before joining the wool industry in 2008. She managed brand developments for South African merino wool products, including styling, wool textile innovation, and marketing products with retail partners. In June 2016, Delaina was appointed as the Secretary General of the International Wool Textile Organization based in Brussels, Belgium. IWTO is the recognized global authority for standards in the wool industry and has been representing the interests of the wool textile trade since 1930. IWTO members represent 26 countries and all stages of the wool pipeline. Delaina is the spokesperson for Make the Label Count, an international coalition of organizations representing a wide range of natural fiber producers and environmental groups. But we all have one thing in common. We are all working to ensure that sustainability claims for textiles in the EU are fair and credible. Delaina, welcome to The Thing About Cotton. It's so nice to have you join us. And I hear that you actually started your career in cotton. So could you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Thank you, Rebecca, and thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I feel very privileged to be here as a wool person, but yes, as you said, started my career as a young designer, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in South Africa in manufacturing, and our factory was producing only cotton garments for Levi International and also for our local retailers in South Africa. At that time, we were very privileged to have a full cotton pipeline in South Africa, and we had an open door policy. Our Levi buyers and our other retail buyers could walk into our factory at any time. We could hop on a plane and take them to the frame group just up the coast in KwaZulu-Natal, where they could see where their cotton comes in as a bale and comes out as a fabric. And it was a time which, when I look back at it, was so special, because we've lost that incredible transparency and that closeness to our buying managers, which for me at the time, I thought was just how it was. But now I realized was a very privileged position to be in, to actually understand where your textile comes from and understand and know the hands who make it, which I think we've lost in our fast fashion world.
Delaina, I first met you several years ago when you addressed a cotton industry forum and talked about EU legislation and its impact on wool carpet. And you made quite a shocking revelation, which made us cotton people sit up straight. Can you please recount that for us?
Yeah, so at the time it was international standards that were accepted by the Commission. And it was around durability, colour fastness, and the conversation was very much hijacked by the makers of petroleum-based fibre carpet. So we came to the situation where all durability claims, for instance, on carpets were based on tensile strength. And if you understand your tensile strength test, you will know that no natural fibre, a cotton rug or a wool rug, will never perform well under that test. It's not about natural fibres are not going to perform on tensile strength. but I'm sitting with my feet on a beautiful wool carpet that's been here forever in this office. And it is not tensile strength that keeps it here. It is the effect that it reflects dirt.
So, Delaina, was that a wake-up call for the wool industry? Because I know in terms of cotton, when we look at legislation and traceability and sustainability, we get worried about market access. And I think that was the first time that we heard that a natural fiber was denied market access, but wasn't aware of it being legislated at the time. So was that the wake-up call for wool? And then did that lead in to make the label count?
Yes, I think it was very much a wake-up call. We also realized how strong the other side is and how small, just for wool, we're 1% of global fiber use. So we're so small in the bigger pond, and it's so difficult to make your voice heard under these circumstances. And I think that was years later when we reached the point where some of these commercial standards were earmarked by the Commission to be written into law. We immediately felt a feeling of deja vu and said, okay, now this time things have to happen differently. And that's also why we reached out to our other natural fiber industry friends like cotton, silk, alpaca, mohair, and said, guys, we've been through this before. We're now facing legislation under the EU Strategy for Sustainable and Circular Textiles, which in any regular person's ear sounds like we should be right up there with the chosen fibers. But we know that the rhetoric very quickly gets taken away from us and gets it goes mm-hmm. in a different direction. So we need to be in at the table. We need to be in the room. And we need to really speak up, or we might face a much worse situation this time, because it's really part of a big part of legislation that's really meant very well by the Commission to deal with the overproduction, overconsumption of textiles. It's a major problem. It is a waste problem, not just here in the EU, but around the world. We see the images of textile waste creating so much problems for our communities. And that's why it was absolutely a red flag to say, okay, this time things have to happen differently.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the purpose of Make the Label Count, and perhaps a little bit about how it gets funded? And you just made reference to the EU. How does Make the Label Count tackle the EU machine in terms of accessing members of parliament and legislators?
Yeah, so for us, little IWTO, we have a very small office here in Brussels. Fortunately for us, the English and the French had a fight at some point, as they sometimes do, and they decided to put an office in Brussels because it was considered neutral. And that was actually way before the Commission was here. But now we have physically good access to our commissioners and our members of parliament. To make this work in a practical way, we again cannot really make a difference on our own. And that's why we formed the coalition in 2021, saying as a natural fiber industry global association, we would like to have a voice at the table. And so far, we've just had some update meetings with our coalitions. We have 71 members so at this point, which is just about double of what we had last year this time. And the beauty of it is that it is all it's over all natural fibers, but also globally. So it's Silk India, Silk China, it is mohair South Africa, it is cotton from Abrapa in South America, it's cotton from America. It's really a global organization representing all natural fibers, and also members within those pipelines from farm right through to manufacturing. And we have brands as members as well. So it's a very representative group of people. And there's a huge amount of knowledge, as you can imagine, locked up. So when the Commission offers the opportunity for us to have public consultations, as they do, we have a great group of people that we can call to action and ask to submit either technical information or stats about natural fibers. And this is the power of working together as a natural fiber industry. As far as funding is concerned, we really are not equipped as a natural fiber industry to to really lobby the commission as they do here in Brussels. So we've had to outsource that to a company called Brunswick, which is taking care of that activity for us. And they understand the workings of the commission, the parliament, the coalition, and they give us the information when we need it, when we need to speak to a specific part of the commission or members of parliament on a specific topic, because your timing is as important as your information. And that's just something that we cannot manage on our own. That's a very particular function that you need professional people for. So that's where most of the funding is really used as well. For the rest, we are a bunch of passionate natural fiber industry people, and we tend to work over weekends and evenings to bring the facts and figures needed at the right time to the right people. For the rest, our funding, the first 3 years of our campaign was funded completely by the wool industry. But since then, we have been very well supported by our cotton members, and now at least a third to half of our funding comes from global cotton members that have seen the result of the campaign to date, but have also seen the need to continue. And I think that's the important thing. This is not a sprint. This is a huge piece of legislation. It's really important that it does get implemented properly and based on scientific facts and giving all fibers an equal footing and the opportunity to shine, because we must understand that we cannot go to hospital without using a high-quality man-made fiber. You know, there's some really important applications for man-made fibers. What we're talking about here is the issue with fast fashion, where low-quality fossil fuel fibers are used in abundance and causing the textile waste. So it must be very clear that we are not saying that only natural fibers can be used on this planet going forward. That is not the case at all. We're just saying we need a level playing field and we need the decisions made on science and well-supported science. So that's why we formed the coalition. Mm. And that's, in short, how we are funded.
Excellent. It's great to hear all of the natural fibres are pulling together for this very important movement.
And Delaney, you mentioned it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, really, because this piece of legislation is part of the Green Deal, and that's where the EU aims to achieve a climate neutral and a circular economy by 2050. So there is a long way to go to get to that, but it's also very complex, isn't it? I mean, 27 member states, 3 levels of governance within the EU. How does that come together when, you know, representatives of natural fiber want their voices heard? What's the mechanism that brings people together to share that science-based data?
Yes, and it's an important a part of the puzzle, because that's something that we really didn't understand in the beginning, and that's why you need professional help to make that clear, as I said, that you understand which part of the puzzle to talk to at the right time. But when we started the process, this particular textile legislation falls under DG Environment, and they gave industry the opportunity to form a technical secretariat, a group of industry representatives who met over the past 5 years to come up with a methodology to support various pieces of legislation going forward. Because what we're really after, and this is the interesting part, this is what keeps us going and what really inspires us, is we are looking for the first time to establish a definition of sustainable textiles. This is something that's always been a commercial decision by a brand to say, I'm sustainable, this is why, I'm green, this is why. We saw the commission did some serious research on that, and that's where the Green Claims Directive had its origin. And they found that more than 53% of green claims were just unsubstantiated or simply false. So there's so much greenwashing in the industry, which is just based on commercial standards. And therefore, the need to come up with a standard that really can underscore this textile legislation. And this is where the rubber hits the road, because now we are really coming to the crux of the matter. How do we measure sustainability in textiles? What is real sustainability in textiles? What is real renewability? What is real circularity? What can be recycled successfully and whatnot? And of course, this is a moving field. There's new innovation coming to market all the time. But these questions we're now grappling with, and within the technical secretariat, that was the real question they were facing. IWTO had a seat at the table, and so did one of the cotton industry members. And they came up with something called the PEFCR, Product Environmental Footprint Category Rules. This was just handed over to DG Environment in June. And DG Environment has now told us that they, over the next 6 months, will review how these category rules impact on what we're after, which is the definition of sustainable textiles. Mm-hmm. Because if we should apply it today, for instance, polyester would measure around 20 points of impact, and cotton double that at 40. Wool is off the chart at 220. So, you know, if you ask any person on the street if natural fibers are sustainable, they would normally say, yes, of course they are. They're biodegradable, they're renewable, they sequester carbon, all the rest of it. And we know they're recycled. If you go into a vintage store, you will find the old wool coats, the old wool cotton blend jackets from 1970s and 80s. Those are the garments that really last. Not your polyester viscose blouse from last season. Those are not, they're just not sustainable in that sense. So the current methodology is against logic thinking. It's against consumer thinking, I think it's safe to say. And if we should apply that methodology and say this is going to be our lighthouse, this is going to be how we measure sustainable textiles in future, we will drive our consumers towards polyester. We'll drive them to buy more of the stuff that's causing all the pollution at the moment. So there's a real issue with the current footprinting scoring that needs to be resolved. And the commission promised to do that over the next 6 months. So just today is a deadline for more submissions on allocation methods, for instance. So this all gets very technical. And of course, our technical experts need to prepare those papers and make sure that they are submitted on time and, again, to the right people at the right forum. So the Commission committed to update the environmental footprint methodology that underscore the PEFCR to include things like biodiversity, proper circularity, because at the moment, if you apply, there's 16 category rules. If you apply, for instance, the one that relates to biodegradability to a cotton shirt and to a polyester shirt, the difference in score is 0.01. So there's actually no positive score given to the cotton for being biodegradable, or other side of the coin, we're not giving a negative score to the polyester blouse for not being able to biodegrade. So although there is in the method as such, biodegradability is included, the devil is in the details. It's when you apply the methodology, how does the weighting of that specific category impact on your final score? And this is the detail that we have to keep a very keen eye on. Because in the end, at the moment, the commission said, we're not allowed to use this methodology to come up with a single score. But that was always how it was earmarked in the beginning. So for now, good result. We're not allowed to use a single score. They also said we're not allowed to use a business-to-consumer message based on PEFCR. Again, good. That was what our campaign was about, make the label count, because in the end, the consumer will turn the label and say, oh, this is good for the environment. I'm investing in something that's sustainable when I buy this garment. Okay, so then the label must reflect real sustainability issues, and at the moment it does not.
So basically, natural fibers weren't at the table when those categories were being, or maybe they were there, but the technical input into the weighting of those for the score wasn't as well supported by data. Is that fair to say, or is that just too technical?
I think it's just...
We're providing so much data.
Yeah. And then when you look at, you know, for instance, the data sets that they were using, the data sets for cotton were completely old. The data set for wool was taken from one meat sheep farm in New Zealand ages ago, instead of using the current wool data that we supplied. So there's also an issue with the data set. And again, the commission said this data set comes to an end at the end of this year, and there will be a complete new data set. Now, when you look at across the border to France, they have come up with a system called EcoByLease. And their data set, for instance, is very transparent. From the start, they allowed us to import our latest data into those data sets. And in the end, we cannot take informed and proper decisions on defunct data. We have to have the right data in place. And these data sets need constant updating, for sure, because we know, you know, agriculture is a science. It develops every 6 months. There's something new. And can you imagine using old farming cotton data to reflect how farmers react now on cotton farms? It's just ridiculous. So you're going to get a skewed result. And that's why we've also been fighting for the data set to be updated, which we have now got the confirmation that the data set will definitely be updated for 2026.
Oh, that's great. So I think the right people are connected to provide the updated data sets.
Absolutely. The cotton industry is now very much connected, yes.
Yeah. And there are the other alphabet soup acronyms that we've heard. We've heard PEF, we've heard PEF-CR, so that's product environment footprint, product environment footprint category rules, and the other one is the LCA, so this life cycle analysis. So it has a lot of limitations for natural fiber, Delaina. Can you explain what they are? Like, where do the boundaries sit?
This is really a big issue we're grappling with, because it's very clearly stated in ISO. So ISO 14044 reflects how we should do our LCAs for fibers. And it very clearly says within that ISO standard that these LCAs have serious limitations. It sets it out very clearly. And it also warns against using one LCA against another. So using the wool LCA against an alpaca LCA and saying, okay, this fiber is better than the other. It should never be used like that. And yet when you look at current commercial standards like the HEC MSI or what they called Worldly now, that's exactly what they do. We just had a very interesting presentation by Dr. Jesse Daystar to the cotton fraternity just a few weeks ago, where he actually gave us a live demo of the HEC MSI. And although there's a warning on the screen saying, do not use these LCAs to compare one fiber to the next, just down the road on that same screen, there's a comparator button, right? So you press the comparator button and then it does exactly that. So we have really got to get this right. Our ISO standards say, do not use an LCA to compare one fiber to the next. Do not even use an LCA from Australia wool to compare South African wool or a wool in Patagonia, because the area is different, the topography is different, the rainfall is different. You need to understand where your fiber is grown to understand the full impact on that region. And just do not use LCAs. An LCA is like a rubber band. Wherever you pull, you know, there's your boundary and that's what you come up with. So to say firstly that LCA is science is not true. And secondly, we need to follow ISO, where they have just updated in 2018 to 14044 to 14067, which now says we should include biogenic carbon. Now, if you speak to any of your retail partners at the moment, they will tell you that their absolute 100% focus is on decarbonizing. So, of course, that's our factories turning from black energy to green. That is where we manufacture. It's our transport miles. It's how it's transported. Are we flying stuff in instead of shipping? All of those aspects will have an impact on the retailers decarbonizing. But then we get to scope three, which is where the fiber is made on farm, on the sheep's back or on, you know, on land. And that we need to get right. And according to 14067, we should include the biogenic carbon, which at the moment we are not doing. And again, coming back to the update of the EF methods, that is what the Commission has asked for as well, is that we update to include biogenic carbon. Now, this is a very interesting, quite new science. As you can see, ISO only incorporated in 2018. So there's a lot of work to be done on that for us to prove that our natural fibers actually take CO2 out of the atmosphere and store it in the ground as carbon, which is a fantastic point that we haven't measured before.
And it's also that, you know, it's the inherent work of a farmer, whether they're growing cotton or they're producing wool, to be sustainable, because if they're not, they'll go out of business, right? There's certain understandings of sustainability, but there's constant improvement in the production of natural fiber. There are, you know, technologies in breeding, whether it be for sheep or for cotton seed, and to improve yield, to improve quality. That's an ongoing process. So it makes sense for those whatever data sets to be updated with the latest information so that it's being, you know, appropriately assessed, if you like, rather than measured. So it's good to see that impact is happening, you know, with the technical secretariat listening to the concerns. So I'm very glad to hear that. And hopefully we will get to the point where, you know, we're doing something positive for the environment and being recognized for it.
Absolutely. And if you look at the just at the farm behind me, I think that was a sixth generation wool farm on that picture. You cannot farm on the same land for 200-300 years if you don't leave it in a better state for the next generation. It's just not possible. And there was a very interesting post on LinkedIn yesterday, and I speak to retail sustainability managers all the time. And there was one saying, we keep talking about sustainability. When I was in the factory and working with our fiber producers, it's about survival. Okay, so sustainability is an absolute cornerstone of survival. It is reusing your cutoffs. It is getting your rating as maximized as possible. It is finding those really well-produced garments for your retailer. You know, that is real sustainability. It's about quality. It's about following high-quality standards from farm through the manufacturing chain. And we've lost that because we've been chasing, we've been on this downward spiral, which is price, price, price. And consumers see their garments as throwaway razors. And the previous commissioner of the environment said he made this comparison to say that it seems like consumers are just seeing their garments as a throwaway razor that they can wear 7 or 8 times, I think is the stat in Europe. I mean, that is just ridiculous that you can throw away a brand new garment after 8 wears.
Yeah, well, they're that cheap. Some people don't even wear them. They just throw them. So there's a whole other kettle of fish to deal with. That's educating the general public as well.
Absolutely. But, you know, we're facing the same issue as we had with tobacco in the 80s and 90s. When we grew up, we thought it was super cool to smoke because there were these pictures of girls in bikinis on boats and yachts and they had the best boyfriends. That was sold to us in movie theaters, right? Now, I give away my age, but that was the message that was given to us by Rothmans and Stuyvesant. And it took legislation because those people were not going to put a picture of a cancerous lung instead of the yacht with the fancy people. It took legislation to make people understand the impact of nicotine on your lungs. I think we're facing the same issue with textiles at the moment because the consumer is caught in a marketing machine that tells her she has to have something new every Saturday, and shopping on a Saturday is part of your entertainment of the weekend, and that is textile shopping, right? Because we've made textiles just so cheap. I remember making jeans for Levi in the most wonderful ring-spun denim that you would wear for 30, 40 years, that you would hand over to your kids. And then it went from 100% cotton ring-spun to cotton poly lycra. Yeah. And it's a rag. Yeah. I mean, you can literally wear it for one season and it falls apart. That's not a denim jean anymore. That's not cotton denim jeans anymore. That's just a rag. And this is what we've created.
Dalena, listening to you and hearing about the fact that it can be quite an uphill struggle, what would you say are your most powerful tools of persuasion to change minds, and how are they best used?
There's a colleague at Harris Tweed that always says to me, it'll take education of our consumers to deal with overconsumption, and it will take legislation of our retail partners to deal with our overproduction. And these two issues are really the core issues we're dealing with at the moment. So when it comes to legislation, we really have to put the science on the table. We have to be clear on the data sets we're using to measure our impacts. I think that is just the cornerstone that is not there at the moment. It's skewed. We then have to look at our methodology, and that's again within the legislative part, is that we are very clear that methodologies, if we're going to underscore legislation with them, that they reflect the full impact of all fibers. For instance, microplastic pollution is not included in our methodology at the moment, and we have seen the science on that. So let's be clear that we include all scientific evidence when we create a methodology that's going to go underscore textile legislation. And we're talking about the EU at the moment, but we know this is the hub, and from here everybody else, they are watching. They are looking to see what are the standards going to be here and how can they implement that in America, in the East, and further beyond. So it's really important that we get it right here, because this is the first time we're doing this. It's never been legislated before. Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure that it's science-based. We have to make sure that we give a level playing field to all fibers, and that the consumer at the end get the real information on their label. When they turn the label, they must be informed properly. Like when we look at the cigarette box, we're not looking at a picture of a yacht anymore. We now understand the full impact of what we're doing. It's still your choice, but it must be an informed decision, and we don't have that at the moment.
So it's science-based data for science-based decision-making.
Totally.
So for our audience members listening in, some of them are part of the natural fibers industry and some are citizens, interested and concerned citizens. So what can our audience members, those who are within the industry and those who are responsible citizens, what can they do to support Make the Label Count and ensure that these very important perspectives are being heard by legislators?
I think it is a super important question because we as the consumer have the power to make the difference. We have the power to refuse to buy low quality fast fashion items. We do not support that. We do not invest in that. We invest in pieces that will last longer, that are made from fibers that are high quality, that have been made by hands that are getting paid a fair wage. We have the power to make those decisions. So it starts at home with what we do, how we teach our kids, how we teach our children to understand the value of the textiles we buy. And then, of course, we all have our local politician who would love to have our vote. Well, it's time to speak up to those politicians and make them work for their votes, because they do have a voice. And this is very much a political decision as well. And those voices need to be heard at a political level. You have probably seen on the news 30,000 tractors coming into Brussels when things were going south on agriculture legislation. Our farmers need to speak up. They need to understand that your fiber does not only go as far as your farm gate. Mm-hmm. You have to understand where it ends up. And to say, oh, I'm farming cotton in America and exporting it to India, I don't care about what happens in Europe, that is a very short-sighted view, because your garment might be made in India or in China, but it ends up back in Europe where people have the money to buy it. So please understand where your fiber ends up, Mr. Farmer. And please make sure that you speak to your local politician to say, I want to have a fair voice for agriculture. This could impact so many. We know around 300 million of the poorest families in the world depend on farming for an income. this legislation has the power to either uplift them or to kill their income. And we have to make sure that the voice of the farmer is heard at the political level. And this is super important. Our farmers need to speak up. And when we get told by commissioners that we can't use cotton because it's using too much water and pesticides, that old false news needs to be killed once and for all. So we really need to speak up. And we need to get those messages and the correct data and the correct facts in front of the decision makers. And that starts locally with your local politicians. And then you have to put pressure on them to make sure that those decisions are also carried through into their international dealings. Because we're talking to cotton farmers in America and Australia, and those people want their trade to continue. Not a good time to talk about trade, but let's face it, the cotton doesn't stay in America. The cotton doesn't stay in Australia. So where does it go? And let's make sure that the correct voices are heard at the table. Our coalition gives natural fiber industries an opportunity to be heard in Brussels. So please take what we send out and circulate it further and also submit to us. Let's get that communication going both ways. I think that would be super important over the next 2 or 3 years.
Amazing. And I love that. It's all about having, as you said, the correct data, the correct facts, and it's time to do some myth busting, because there's a lot of inaccurate information out there, not just about cotton, but also about other natural fibers. So we're all for myth busting at Women in Cotton.
Yes. Yeah. And look, I have never in my time in the industry, I can almost remember those ads, Delana, so I'm not too far behind you. I've never seen such a cohesive group of voices now really wanting to look at this, you know, the good news story of cotton in a pre-competitive manner. So I think it's great that, you know, we have the challenge, but we have the opportunity with Make the Label Count to actually get the voices heard in the places that they need to be heard in the EU that will ultimately have that ripple effect to legislation in other countries. So, you know, we really value the work that Make the Label Count is doing. And look, just looking at the timeline, what's next for Make the Label Count? What's on the horizon for you for the next 6 months?
Yeah, that's, thank you for that. And thank you for your support. It's really appreciated. You know, the farmer, it's the glass is always half full and then the rest is there to be filled, right? Yeah. So that's how we see this opportunity. It is an opportunity to speak up. It is an opportunity to myth bust all those bad data sets on natural fibers. So let's do it. We have 6 months ahead of us to really submit the best quality data we can, so that when we start in 2026 looking at data sets and updating this PEFCR methodology, that we do that on the best available data. That is, for me, the crucial focus point for the next 6 months. As industries, as cotton, as moe, as wool, as alpaca, come up with your data sets, come up with your best quality stats, get it to us and make sure that it's submitted into the commission, because this is our opportunity to make a difference for our farmers and for our industry.
Well, Delana, thank you so much for that. And we thank you. And Elizabeth van Delden also, who works with you in Brussels. We know that you have a small team, but we, for a small team, you pack a big punch when it comes to getting access with the messages that we need. We think you've done incredibly impactful work, and we in the cotton industry and Women in Cotton, we talk about this quite a bit, and we use our platform where we can to promote the work of Make the Label Count and bring the challenges and the opportunities to, you know, to our community. Before we let you go, what's the one thing about cotton? And I know we're really talking natural fibers here, but what's the one thing about cotton and natural fibers that you would like our audience to know?
I think I'm wearing a jacket of 50 cotton, 50 wool. And so many of, I was just thinking about it, looking at my cupboard this morning. So many of my garments are cotton and wool blends. And as you know, I started my career in cotton. And it's just such a wonderful fiber to wear. But as we consider our impact going forward, we really need to think about what we do and how we do it and what our decisions are based on. And I think that's really what I would like each and every person to think about, to consider. Do I really need another garment? And if I do need it, if I absolutely do need it, how do I support my farmers? How do I support my environment? And how do I make a purchase that's really supported by real data, by real information, and that's a responsible purchase? We need to really think about what we do in the textile industry, not for the sake of legislation and the rest, but for the sake of our planet and our kids. And that, there we come back to willpower. We have the power as women to make a difference.
Mm, absolutely, we do. Look, we could talk to you for hours, honestly, we could. But we don't. We know that you have a lot of work to do in Brussels today, so we will let you go on that note. And thank you again for joining us, Rebecca.
Thank you so much, Dalena. It's been wonderful to have you.
Absolute pleasure. As you say, we could speak for hours, but we'll be back. We will talk again. We'll continue to talk through this important period.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, Ema, that was a really fascinating episode, wasn't it? With a lot of information.
Yes, a lot of detailed information, Rebecca.
And I think when I'm reflecting back on what I've just heard, the main learning and takeaways for me is really the importance of the sector pulling together, particularly the natural fibers sector pulling together, how important that is.
Yeah.
And what I wasn't really aware of until this episode is actually how long this has been going on for. Like the fact that this movement has been brewing for a while, and it sounds like it's only in the last couple of years that it's really gained traction. And there are some key things that seem to have made the difference for it to be able to gain that traction.
Yeah, and I mean, getting the heads up from the wool industry with their experience, I think that was invaluable to be able to connect with them a couple of years ago, and then to get on board as well with the funding. Because as Dalena says, this is a marathon, it's not a sprint. There's a long way to go with this yet.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it sounds like there's three main elements that helped to move this in the direction that it's going. And it sounds like one is what I said before, is the sector pulling together, the natural fibers sector pulling together in the right direction. It's the funding and the resourcing. That's obviously incredibly important. And then finally, it sounds like having the right people at the right tables at the right time is obviously what was needed to make that difference, because sounds like decisions were being made like in the absence of the experts. And so it's really good to hear that that's now changing. And another takeaway for me is around the shifting perceptions. I liked the way Dalena made reference to the tobacco industry and how there's so much work that needs to be done to actually shift perceptions, especially for people that don't work within the textile sector. They may not have the same level of awareness.
Yeah, that's true. And Rebecca, the wool industry, the Woolmark company, put together a couple of videos on YouTube.
Yes,
so if anybody wants to have a look at those, and they are quite, there's a post-apocalyptic feel to them, about man-made fibers and what happens to us and the planet when we continue to consume man-made fibers in fashion. So I think people should check that out on YouTube, Woolmark videos.
That's right. Yes, I do remember seeing those a couple of years ago, and they were really powerful. And I guess finally, it's the science, making sure that we have science-backed data for science-based decision-making. So when we do have the right people at the table, they're actually providing the right kind of data to help with the decision-making. And that will contribute towards the perception shift as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And also knowing that natural fibers continue to evolve in their ability to improve yields. And I mean, even the whole decarbonization piece, I mean, we'll have a whole podcast on that, no doubt. Cotton garments sequester carbon while they're hanging in your wardrobe. We have to talk about that at some point as
Absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, there's so many good pieces of data about it, but I think our industry as a whole, we've been very good at talking to each other and telling each other how good we are, but we need to get that message out to the general public and certainly to brands and retailers. So we'll do our bit on that front.
Absolutely. And how can we help people that might be listening in right now who do want to be part of this movement and who do want to help?
Well, I think one way is to email us at the podcast at ICA make-the-label-count.org. And, you know, we can put people in touch with Make the Label Count campaign, or maybe see where they are in the world and connect them to people that we know in those regions.
Excellent. And that's the case for people who work within the fashion and textile sector, as well as the responsible citizens who may be concerned about this.
Yeah, exactly. And look, it's a deep dive for anybody who's not used to listening to podcasts like this that talk about the detail of legislation. It is, there's a lot of detail in there, but it's up to all of us to pick up a garment and look at the label and see what's in it and then make our decisions. So if you want to be more informed about that, certainly we can get in touch with Make the Label Count and we can share that information through the podcast email. So thanks for listening to this episode of The Thing About Cotton. We hope you learned something about the work of Make the Label Count and the role that the cotton industry can play in supporting and connecting with legislators to level the legislative playing field for cotton. Keep listening to us to learn more about the ins and outs of the cotton value chain, and catch us next time when we take a look at cotton farming practices in the US and see how this new crop is developing. If you want to learn more about today's episode or have other questions about the cotton value chain, feel free to email us at podcast@ica-ltd.org. And don't forget to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google, and follow the Women in Cotton group on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook to find out about our upcoming podcast episodes, events, and to engage with men and women in the industry. Special thanks to the International Cotton Association for giving us this platform to deliver the podcasts.